Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the internet. First, more motions in the Chad Daybell matter. Second, Brandon Bernard doesn't receive a stay on his execution. Third, a thank you to a couple of our subscribers. Fourth, Harvey goes to court and delays going to California. Fifth, a Mississippi prison has a little less contraband thanks to some new technology. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of our contestants for the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you please hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content, and as always, leave me a comment below. First on the docket, more motions in the Chad Daybell matter. Now, the other day, John Pryor, the attorney for Chad Daybell, filed a brief in support of his motion for a change of venue. Now, the only thing of real substance in that brief was that apparently at some point, which has not been released to the public, was a survey that was apparently done, which is to show the court that some empirical data suggests that a large swath of the community there has already formed an opinion as it relates to the case. That's good empirical evidence that the court will have to consider. The other information that was included in there was a little generic and general, and basically saying there's a lot of misinformation by the press and the prosecutors playing games and trying to manipulate that by, for example, not releasing the autopsy report of Tammy Daybell. I'm a firm believer, hey, if that report's done and they're not going to file charges, make it public. Let's cut to the chase. Let's cut to the truth. Certainly, the prosecutor has a little bit of a motive to try and play the whole Lori Vallow is a widowmaker, killing off a series of ex-husbands. And, you know, a lot of people around her just simply seem to die rather unexpectedly. Now, is that coincidence or have they got probable cause? If they've got probable cause, charge her. If they don't, let's move on. Let's let the facts decide the case. And let's face it, there's a lot of bad facts for the case of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell that you don't need to bring in all this extra drama. And we've talked about this before in previous videos where how are they going to get all that other evidence in? It's not relevant to this particular case. It's what they call 404B evidence. It's not worth the hassle on the prosecution. In this particular case, they have a very straightforward case. Her children are missing. She acted like she didn't care. Certainly, if she didn't have something to do with it, a lot of people believe that her brother, Alex Cox, may have had something to do with it. That would be my inclination. But she certainly didn't go around looking for the children or acting very concerned when she got married to Chad Daybell 2 weeks after his wife passed away unexpectedly, who, as far as we know, was relatively healthy and training for a marathon. Those are some pretty good facts. The fact that they went to Hawaii and no children to be found, nothing of the children there to say that they were being cared for, and she has no idea. Let's face it, that's the biggest problem Lori Vallow has in her case. And Chad Daybell, I guess his defense is going to be, I didn't know. I married this woman 2 weeks after. How was I supposed to know all that was going on in her life other than maybe they were involved, one could say, long before that? So we'll see how things shake out. So the district attorney has served some new motions on the defense, specifically Mr. Pryor. The district attorney is asking for the names, telephone numbers, and curriculum vitae, which is a fancy word for resume, of any and all expert witnesses the defense intends to call at the hearing for the defendant's motion to change venue, and any and all expert witnesses upon whose work the defense to rely on at the hearing for the defense motion to change venue. Why is that? If there was a survey done, which it's been alluded to and apparently attached to, the qualifications of the people doing the interpretation and what they did is at issue. So now we need to find that out. And the prosecution certainly has a right to have that information prior to any hearing as well. The second request from the prosecutor to Chad DeBell's attorney is for each of the expert witnesses or individuals specified in specific request number one and the response thereto, the prosecution requests the defendants provide the prosecution with A, the facts or data upon which said expert bases his or her opinions, any articles, report, treaties, books, periodicals, or other documents used, reviewed by the expert to help him or her formulate their opinion upon which she bases their opinion, the substance of any said expert opinion or testimony. This is standard information. Normally, if you're relying upon an expert witness, the court can dictate, but usually most states say 35 days prior to trial, you have to turn over the report, and what they say in the report is usually what they're limited to testifying to. Anything that they're relying upon, any information that they've examined, tests that they've conducted, all that has to be turned over so that you can have a fair hearing. We do know, or possibly believe, based upon the pleadings of John Pryor, that he attached a kind of a results of the survey that was conducted to show that the citizens have formed an opinion in the county, and therefore neither Chad DeBell nor Lori Vallow can receive a fair trial. Now, one thing note about all of this stuff is that, once again, where is Mr. Means? Why is he not filing anything? I think he's simply riding the coattails of Mr. Pryor and Chad DeBell in this particular case. That's probably the best tactic that he has taken thus far in all of these proceedings. Let me know. I know this is kind of a hot issue. Do you think the case is going to get moved, or do you think that it'll stay where it is? Let me know in the comments below. Next on the docket, Brandon Bernard. That's right. He did not receive a stay of execution despite the pleas from Hollywood elite like Kim Kardashian, if she falls into the Hollywood elite. But certainly the cause of Mr. Brandon Bernard was the cause celeb, so to speak. Now, no one disputed that Mr. Bernard was in fact guilty. They just simply believe that he should not be executed. Kim Kardashian put out statements, as well as a legal team for Mr. Bernard. Mr. Bernard's legal team put out a statement saying that they called the execution, quote, a stain on America's criminal justice system, end quote, and insisting that Brandon's life mattered to many, including his family, friends, and supporters around the world. Kim Kardashian also put out a series of tweets stating that she had just spoken to Brandon for what will likely be the last time. Hardest call she's ever had. Brandon, selfless as always, was focused on his family and making sure they're okay. He told me not to cry because our fight isn't over. She also tweeted that when he told me he's claustrophobic and they offered to give him a shot of sedative to calm him down before they put him in the chair and he just didn't want to panic. I literally lost it. I had to mute the phone so he wouldn't hear me cry like that. We didn't say goodbye because we wanted to be hopeful that we would talk again. We will talk again soon, Kim Kardashian quoted. Now, needless to say, the family of the victims of Mr. Bernard told Kim Kardashian they need to stop trying to save the convicted killer Brandon Bernard from being executed, because she's not considering the pain of the family he destroyed. Dana Ladd, the stepsister of one of Bernard's victims, Stacey Bagley, told the press that he deserves to be executed by lethal injection Thursday at the penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana, despite Kim's desperate pleas to the White House to spare his life. Ladd said, "I want her to think about if it was one of her children that Bernard did that to. Would she feel differently? It's easy for people to say things when they don't have the similar experience." Now, Kim Kardashian also put out a tweet and said, "I stand by what I have always said. I can empathize and feel pain for the victims and their families. Killing Brandon will not bring them back, and I believe in my heart of hearts, killing him isn't right. Brandon did was wrong, but killing him won't make things right. Obviously, this is one of the issues that divides America when it comes to criminal justice system. The death penalty. Does it help? Does it hurt? Is it simply retribution? Is it a deterrent? Let me know in the comments below. Obviously, when it's one of your family members that has been killed, you may have a different perspective on it than someone who's never had to go through that. And as we talked about before, Bernard was 18 in 1999 when he was involved in the brutal kidnapping and killing of Todd and Stacy Bagley. Now, while Bernard was not the trigger man, he put the victim's body in the trunk of the car and set it on fire. Prosecutors believe that Stacy Bagley was not actually dead at that time. And prosecutors believe that when the car was lit on fire, that was actually the cause of her death. The victims also go on to say that Bernard never showed any remorse throughout this entire process. A lot of the reason why this became a cause célèbre is that one of the co-defendants who shot the couple in the head was executed back in September. There were three other teenagers involved, and they received long prison sentences, while Christopher Vialva and Bernard got the death penalty. Anyway, let me know what your thoughts are on this particular case. Neither the Supreme Court nor the White House intervened in this when they could have. Right decision or wrong decision? Let me know. Now, next on the docket, I want to thank a couple of subscribers for a very nice statement. I received a letter from Maria Thomas, and she is a part of an organization, the Pillar of Strength Award. And she was kind enough to send me this Pillar of Strength Award basically for my service in the military, although it was a long time ago. But I thank you very much, Maria, for that. That was appreciated. I'm truly undeserving of that award, but thank you very much for sending it. The next thing I'd like to say thank you to is to a subscriber named Harry, who knows that I like cigars, and sent me this beautiful humidor. And although I have several humidors, this is by far the biggest one that I have. And as you can see, this will hold a lot of cigars. Look how deep that is. So once again, thank you. Truly undeserving, but I'm very thankful for that. No one has to do anything like that, but thank you. Thank you very much. Not sure if that was made, but it's absolutely beautiful. It's got the little cigar on top and just all the nice work that they did with that. It was very nice. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I guess had I known what was inside the box, I would have maybe taped it, and you could have seen my excitement when I was opening it, because I just had never received anything like that. And thank you once again, Maria, for that award as well. Thank you. Now, next on the docket, Harvey goes to court. Any delays going to California? That's right. Convicted former movie producer Harvey, we all know the guy we're talking about, he is going to remain in a New York prison for now after his lawyers and prosecutors agreed Friday to postpone efforts to send him to California to face those pesky sexual assault charges similar to what he dealt with in New York. The Erie County Judge Kenneth Case had everybody appear via video because obviously there's a pandemic going on. And Mr. Harvey was seated at a table at the Maximum Security Correctional Facility east of Buffalo, where Harvey is appeared wearing a maroon polo shirt and a face mask and spoke only briefly in response to a series of questions by the judge. He waved his hand and shook his head in objection to a news station request to allow a television camera in the courtroom. The judge kept the camera out, but allowed the media to record the video proceedings. Now, for those of you who do not recall, this guy named Harvey is 68 and is serving a 23-year prison sentence after being convicted in New York City earlier this year on charges of sexual assault against two women. he faces similar charges involving five women in California, stemming from alleged assaults going back to 2004 through 2013. Because he is imprisoned in New York, a judge must sign off on transferring him to the custody of the Los Angeles authorities to be tried there. Harvey's attorneys cited in supporting the continued delay the fact that Harvey had experienced symptoms of COVID-19 again in November after he had already dealt with a bout of it back in April. The court agreed, basically stating that obviously the pandemic has become worse rather than better, and the issues pertaining to transportation of someone from New York to California, and specifically with respect to Harvey, raises various serious health concerns, which remain the same. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office agreed to the first delay because of the pandemic as well. So needless to say, he'll be staying there a little longer, and it looks like he's got new counsel as well. I wonder why. Because when you lose, everybody hates the team, you know, lost, even though they put up a good fight. But such is the case. Now, next on the docket, a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, whether personally, professionally, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you'll go there, and it's really simple. You put in the name, they narrow it down through a series of questions to make sure they're talking about the right person. Literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report that's going to give you this person's social media information. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get information if they're a registered sex offender. You're going to get property records, divorce records. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, there's a little less contraband floating around a Mississippi prison today because of some new technology. Officials at the South Mississippi Correctional Institution in Leakesville intercepted more than 25 packages containing a number of items, including 4 pounds of marijuana, 38 cell phones, chargers, and earbuds, and cold medication, plus, get this, chicken and tobacco. Some of the items were sewn into footballs so they could easily be thrown over the 18-foot-tall fence surrounding the prison, but new sensing technology alerted guards to the drop, according to the statement released by the Mississippi Department of Corrections. Unidentified smugglers attempted to throw the packages across a remote section of the prison's grounds, but officers were immediately alerted by the sensors and rushed to the scene, arriving in time to intercept all of the items and to see the vehicle that was driving away. Apparently, the prison has struggled to contain violent gang activities within those walls of the prison, largely because of this contraband that's being brought in. Prisoners found to be connected to the incident will lose eligibility for early release, according to the Mississippi Department of Corrections. Now, people never believed me when I said people can get whatever they want in prison. I've had clients that had no drug problems until they went to prison where they got hooked on drugs. Some people find that hard to believe. It's reality. Bottom line, this is a clear example of it. And although there's been lots of portrayals of things being smuggled into prisons on various shows like Orange is the New Black, it happens. It's the real deal. So you can imagine the value of a cell phone being able to text your loved one from behind bars. It's worth big money. But there's a little less contraband in Mississippi today. And finally, on the docket today, our dumb criminal contestant of the week. And our dumb criminal contestant, Ernest McKnight, today, he may have catapulted himself to the lead for the dumb criminal contestant of the week. Now, you say, what could possibly trump our previous contestants throughout the week? For example, Monday, we had our unidentified bank robber who goes into the bank with a mask on. And if you notice at most banks, there's actually usually decals outside saying it's unlawful to cover your face because we don't want people robbing banks. That's usually what they do, as they cover their face. Why? Because they got to prove identity. That's right. Well, our genius on Monday takes his mask down while he's robbing the bank. Go figure. Now, and don't forget Tuesday, Bud Light Mike, right? Mike Flippinkowski, who was so drunk for stealing Bud Lights that he's actually been charged with a felony because it's not his first time. Then we have Alton Ashby, who was arrested the other day for refusing to put a mask on, but that wasn't the problem. It was the fact that he spit all over the counter and coughed in the direction of the Best Buy employees when asked to put his mask on. And yes, yesterday we had our alleged perverted Santa Claus, Mr. Prince Carter, who liked to touch and expose himself to juveniles in the break room in his Santa suit. Well, Ernest McKnight, get this. He went on a little crime spree. You know, he stole a car, tried to rummage through some other cars, stole some packages from the porch, and when the victim said, hey, return the package to me, Mr. McKnight reportedly yelled back, it's mine now. But wait, it gets better, because when he got arrested, guess who was with him? His 8-year-old son. Now, when Mr. McKnight was asked, why are you taking your 8-year-old son on this little crime spree? Guess what Mr. McKnight said? And I quote, I was trying to toughen him up. I don't want him to be soft, end quote. Needless to say, I don't think this is the parental guidance that most people think about when trying to raise their children. And for that, Mr. McKnight, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. And I'm not going to lie, if it was simply up to me, you would be catapulted to the top of the award. However, it's up to the subscribers to decide our dumb criminal contestant of the week. We'll tally the votes and we'll see. And maybe if Mr. McKnight doesn't win, perhaps we can give him an honorary Parent of the Year award where he can also receive a mug. Frankly, I think Mr. McKnight is worthy of something. Not sure it's really a Crime Talk mug. Maybe a little prison sentence. Maybe a little time away from his 8-year-old son so that he isn't completely screwed up in the future. All right, that's all we have for you today. Please leave me a comment on what we talked about. Don't forget to vote for the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week, and we will see you next week. Have a wonderful weekend.